Welcome back, everyone, to Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. I'm your host, Doug Kameen, and today I'm talking with John Nara, who is Director of Information Technology with Greyhound Lines, the bus company. Welcome to the show, John.
I'm so happy to be here. This is really a great experience, and I appreciate the invitation.
Yeah, thanks. So thanks so much for joining us. So I'm just going to jump right in here and ask you a question about, like, you got an interesting job. Like, I think many of us know what Greyhound is, and you've been there a while. Can you tell us a little bit about what you do there? I mean, you can share what Greyhound is, but I'm pretty sure most everybody does know that.
That's one of the benefits, of very few benefits to working at Greyhound. It's where I don't have to explain what the company does. And I did start there with not my first IT job, but very close to it. I wrote their dispatching system that they still use today, which they probably shouldn't still be using it, but that's neither here nor there. But Ground being a bus company, obviously, but they also still do food service, shipping, and they have all the other IT needs for legal and HR. So it's just been constant challenges. I didn't go there to stay there for 25 plus years, but I stayed there for 25 plus years.
Yeah. But being a part of a company in longevity, you know, probably a testament to the company's ability to, you know, to give you the right things that you want to stay around with.
Yeah, definitely the challenges were there and the technologies were there. Just, you know, going from the mainframe to client server to mobile, or even just the jump to the web, with everything built years and years ago, wasn't built for the web. So there's a lot of challenges. And then the culture, that is so key. Just the president, for most of the time I was the president of the company, used to be a baggage handler in Canada.
Oh, wow.
So salt of the earth guy with a huge Canadian accent. So working for him just was very, made it fun.
He wasn't nuttier than a Tim Hortons maple log, was he? No,
he was,
just kidding. I'm just kidding. That's a TV show to, reference.
Well, actually, you're close enough to Canada. A lot of people down here don't know what Tim Hortons is.
That's right. That is true. I should, you know, for the benefit of those who don't live near the northern Canadian border, Tim Hortons is a donut chain that's very similar to Dunkin' Donuts, and they are all over Canada. So Greyhound, I mean, you've been there so long with so many, you know, doing so many different roles. You're currently in a role as being a director of information technology, but you know, I'm just going to go right back to the first thing you mentioned, which was that you originally wrote some of their, bus routing software?
Routing and dispatching and driver management and bus management. I was brought in to help educate mainframe people and get them all to be client server developers. That part was nearly impossible. Mainframers don't necessarily convert to client server developers, but
sure.
Some do.
Yeah. So like in your, from your experience and your time there, like even though not all of them were always able to make the switch, I totally have that experience too. Like I've worked with people, different roles I've had, like AS400 and stuff like that. And the programmers that are there, you know, I've got this RPG programmer and you're like, hey, let's do this new stuff. And they're like, you know, and they get, you know, they give you kind of glassy eyed look, but you're the leader. So what strategies have you used to try and get them over the finish line and help them along?
Yeah, really just make it fun and listen to them and try to understand, because they got the best intentions usually. Some of them, if they're really bitter and don't want to learn a new thing, I can't force them to do that. But to get others on board and then getting the team all aligned, then they sometimes switch and get on board, or sometimes they quit. But typically we did convert quite a few, but still technology, once they realize too, technology is technology. Mm-hmm. Really, you can learn if you understand the logic of one thing, you can usually apply it to just about anything.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
And I think my positive attitude really helped
get
people to cross over.
Right. So when you were, what language did you write this dispatch software in originally?
It's Power Builder. If people have heard of that one, I've known.
Sorry, what was that?
Power Builder.
Power Builder. I don't know that I am familiar with Power Builder.
Huge in the 90s. It was crazy. Okay. I spend most of my evenings in the 90s on phone calls with recruiters because everybody's looking for Power Builder developers.
Wow.
And then 2000 hit and everything went to crap.
So you're on the flip side of the year 2000 bug, right? Instead of like the work piling up, the work was dropping off.
At Dissecting Popular IT Nerds, we expect to win, and we expect our IT directors to win. And one of those areas where we know that we can help you win is internet service providers. As an IT director tasked with managing internet connectivity, few vendor relationships can prove more painfully frustrating than the one with your internet service provider. The array of challenges seems never ending, from unreliable uptime and insufficient bandwidth to poor customer service and hidden fees. It's like getting stuck in rush hour traffic. Dealing with ISPs can try one's patience even on the best of days. So whether you are managing one location or 100 locations, our back office support team and vendor partners are the best in the industry. And the best part about this is none of this will ever cost you a dime due to the partnership and the sponsors that we have behind the scenes at Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. Let us show you how we can manage away the mediocrity and hit it out of the park. We start by mapping all of the available fiber routes, and we use our $1.2 billion in combined customer buying power and massive economy of scale to map all of your locations, to overcome construction fees, to use industry historical data, to encourage providers to compete for the lowest possible pricing, to negotiate the lowest rates guaranteed, and to provide fast response times in hours, not days. And we leverage aggregators and wholesale relationships to ensure you get the best possible pricing available in the marketplace. And on top of all of this, you get proactive network monitoring and proactive alerts so that you're not left calling 1-800-GO-POUND-SAND to enter in a ticket number and wonder, why is my internet connection down? In short, we are the partner that you have always wanted, who understands your needs, your frustrations, and knows what you need without you having to ask. So we're still human, but we are some of the best, and we aim to win. This all starts with a value discovery call where we find out what you have, why you have it, and what's on your roadmap. All you need to do is email internet@popularit.net and say, I want help managing all of my internet garbage. Please make my life easier, and we'll get right on it for you. Have a wonderful day.
So in your current role at Greyhound, you're director of information technology. It's a wide ranging tool. I'm just kind of I'm looking through your what you got listed on LinkedIn. You work with SAP. You've got Tableau. You've got you're building DevOps and DevOps pipelines for the work that you're doing, Azure and AWS. Tell me a little bit about what's a day in the life for you in your current role, and what are you doing? What kind of team are you leading?
Yeah. So as with most companies, there's been ebbs and flows in the headcount. And it's one of the reasons my title's changed off and on. But really, what's the phrase? Jack of all trades, master of none. Mm-hmm. But I can figure out what needs to be done. And I've had some key people in to help. Obviously, you need people. People is the most important thing. Of course, Google is my friend, and a lot of leadership I've had throughout my leadership has been really supportive in getting people trained. Especially, things that are changing. We went to web methods, which is a whole different animal, and really spend the money to, you don't want to workforce of people that don't know what they're doing. That's kind of the worst thing. So getting people trained and really having to be that leader to really push for that training for your people, and really realize it's a lot of people are afraid to train their people because they don't want them to leave. But again, there's another phrase for that one. It's rather have educated people on your staff than people on your staff that are not educated.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's a great point that you bring up about, because I have this, kind of philosophy, and I share this with folks, in my circles too, about the importance of supporting your staff. So like in what I mean by that is, you know, there's a lot of different ways you can support. That's a very generic term, but specifically to their growth in their future endeavors. So, you know, I tell my own staff, no matter where I'm at, like it's literally one of the first meetings I have when I start a new role and I talk to a new team where I'm like, look, I'm like, I want you to be open with me. I want you to tell me if you want, you know, what are your goals? You know, I'm here to support your goal as the leader, even if that goal is not necessarily here in the future. You know, if you want to sit in a seat like mine and I'm going to be sitting in the seat, so there's not one for you, then like, how do we help you get to that seat in the future? And that, even if that means that a year, 3 years, 5 years from now, you're going to move on. And that type of like openness, and even going so far as to say, like, when the time comes, if you think you're ready to, you know, ready to look for that next opportunity, I want you to tell me in advance, you know, like, don't hesitate to share with me, because it's not like I'm not going to punish you for wanting to advance your career. I want you to maximize the value that you give to us during the time that you're here. And like that type of attitude helps really get, I think that it helps get the most out of what people are willing to give you on a day-to-day basis. It sounds like you kind of follow that, a similar philosophy.
Yeah, I didn't grow up that way. And I think a lot of people didn't grow up that way, because I think companies used to be, well, you got to do it because I told you, and you better not be looking for work and blah, mm-hmm. blah, blah.
Yeah.
I changed that tone. I don't think I really ever had that tone, because I don't want people that are, I want people to be happy. They're so much more productive. Mm-hmm. And really, like one of my leaders back a while ago, when, you know, one-on-ones where he really, really pressed not to talk about work on the one-on-one. He really mm-hmm. wanted to talk about what he can do to help me advance, educate myself, or any roadblocks I need help with. What can he do for me? It's like, I guess that's a servant leader. And that's, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Great. Servant leadership. That is like the, you know, one of the definitions of servant leadership, or one of the part of the definition of servant leadership is how you support the staff, but taken to the most, I don't call it the extreme level, but the logical conclusion as a leader is that I would rather have people that are, how about to describe this? I would rather have people that are satisfied, motivated, but maybe will move on eventually versus people that are, will share that with me, you know, as opposed to, people that, you know, kind of grouse that like, eh, you know, this is, you know, I'm looking, you know, they'll tell their buddy, hey, like, guess what? I'm looking, man. But don't tell Doug, you know? And, I guess it comes back to maybe the perception of, I hate surprises. Mm-hmm. You know, as a manager or a leader, like I tell my team that a lot of like, if there's one thing you could do to make me as a leader, like feel good about things and be happier myself, don't surprise me. You know, like, particularly when it comes to things like, hey, I've been deciding it's time to move on to another role or something like that. Like I can make it easy so you don't, you know, you won't be afraid of surprising me, or you won't be afraid, you won't feel that you need to surprise me in order to do it. Right. So like, let's go back in your history a little bit here. And can you tell us a little bit like what were your formative years and where did you learn like some of the qualities that made you and put you into leadership today?
Well, I did a little bit of time in the world's finest Navy. And that taught me a couple things. It taught me what I didn't want to do for the rest of my career.
Yeah.
But it also, yeah, man, I was in logistics, mm-hmm. which got me, it turned, that was quite a few years ago, because I'm kind of cutting on in years, but that we were using computers a lot, mm-hmm. To keep the inventory and all that. And also just the other technology that it just really, that's what just got me into it.
Mm-hmm. And how many years were you in the Navy?
4.5. I'd extend a half year I spent half my career in Europe and then the other half on the West Coast so I could see the world.
See the world. That's the deal with the Navy. So first of all, thank you for your service. And you know, so it's, I know multiple people. I mean, I think many of us know people who serve in the armed forces, and you know, it has its own unique challenges to be in there. You know, notwithstanding, you know, the differences of bureaucracy in the government and being in such a large organization and stuff like that. But you know, it does place demands on you. At some points, it's like a young man's game, right? Or a young, well, nowadays it's a young person's game. But you know, having to be like, hey, you know, today you're going to be here on, you know, in Arlington or something like that, and then, you know, next month you're going to be shipped out to be on the West Coast or something like that.
Yeah, and it didn't teach me leadership, really. It taught me management,
uh-huh,
and how to use the system to get things done, uh-huh, rather than using relationships.
Yeah. I mean, so like, can you elaborate a little bit on, like, how do you perceive the difference between management and leadership?
I love the graphic where the guy that's, you know, helping his team by standing there pointing and telling him what to do. That's managing. But leaders are jumping in and helping toe the line. But yeah, and the Navy too, I had to really, one of my best friends, I was higher ranked than him, so I could tell him what to do. But mm-hmm. I'm not going to do. I hated that. I hate telling, I'm still to this day, I hate telling people what to do.
Yeah.
I like prioritizing. That's something I enjoy. And I think that's a big difference. Once somebody knows the priority of what needs to be done, it gets them more excited about doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So being in the Navy, not necessarily leadership experience, but management experience taught you how to be, you know, effective management techniques and strategies and other things like that. You moved on to other roles, and also being in there and being in the logistics helped you understand more about, like you were exposed to technology and the technology environment. So that made you interested in this. So where did you go to get into technology?
Yeah, I wanted a degree as soon as I got out. I could have got a degree while I was in, but I really enjoyed other things like seeing the world. But I wanted to get my degree really quick. Mm-hmm. And I went to DeVry, which is an accredited school, and that was really important to me. A lot of people kind of frown on DeVry, but it really it got me where I needed to be quickly.
Mm-hmm.
It taught me a lot of mainframe, which I've never used, but also taught me car builder too, which really helped give me a leg up. And really from there, I worked at UPS throughout my tenure in DeVry. And again, mm-hmm. that was almost like the military kind of company.
Uh-huh.
But they appreciated my experience. I was a manager there too.
Again, more logistics, right?
Logistics. But still, I wasn't really a leader, but I was, actually, I did lead my team. It means that there was an interesting dynamic as well. Blood, sweat, and mm-hmm. But then my first programming job was actually doing environmental software, which I was not really qualified to do, but it was a great job. Huge complexity in environmental software.
Isn't that like it for many of us in our career journeys, there's always that like one job where you had to fake it till you make it, right? I'm so unqualified for this role, but somehow they decided that I was the right fit, and now I'm going to show up and figure it all out. And you know, like it's almost like a foot race. Can you do it?
Yeah, and you picked up on that perfectly. That's exactly what that was. Very small company, and that's where I really started to realize that it's I need to be a better value, not just as a developer, but to lead. There's only one, the president's doing, he's wearing 15 hats. I need to wear at least a couple to help him out. I can't just sit down there nose to the code. And that's where I realized I like that better too. I like strategizing. I like mentoring. I like, you know, motivating. And that's a lot. Yeah, that's where from there I just kind of kept that trend. I ended up doing a lot of coding at Greyhound too, but again, I jumped right into, you know, working very close with the business, and giving them not just what I think is a dispatch system, but what do they really need? The system had to work in the U.S. and Canada. Canada, we talked about earlier, they got different stuff up there. Mm-hmm. It was just different culture, just how they use things.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't do it right, they won't tell you. They just won't use it. So.
they quiet quit on you when it wasn't they before it was cool, right?
Sorry, I'm just not going to use this.
So you do programming, taught you new things that you liked, and then you know, where did you come into next? Then you land at Greyhound, right?
Yeah, and then I think back in the day too, I quickly became a lead developer, which But then I was a project manager forever. And I think we threw that title on a lot of things back in the day. It wasn't really project management. It was managing everything, support and development and business relationships.
It's before Agile. So like, you know,
yeah.
What was real project management before Agile? Did it really exist? Is that, it's like a mythical thing, right?
I think we actually, we implemented Agile by using a vendor that called themselves Agile. That's not, and they didn't really implement Agile. All they did was help manage projects. So
nice. So like, now I 100% like reading up your LinkedIn profile here and to ask you questions, but you had a stint at GameStop.
Yeah, it was, we were bought out by a British company, and they thought everybody would move to Cincinnati, Ohio. Nobody moved to Cincinnati, Ohio. So I took a package and I went to GameStop for about a year, and I went to Nokia for about a year. And then I got called back to Greyhound.
Hey, okay. you were loved enough to be asked to come back.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, I thought when I came back to, everything was in a time, it was just, everything was the same.
it was like your parents had left your room the way it was when you went off to college, right?
Trophies were still there.
Was your stuffed animal still on the, you know, like, so it was still on the shelf, right? So like, of course, this period, you're at GameStop. This is like pre like meme stock days for GameStop. This is actually when it was like, I don't want to call it a legitimate concern because it really is still a legitimate business, but it was a much more substantial business, I think, at this point in time. It was, you know, this is 15 years ago or so. So it's, people were still going to buy video games. You did not download video games on the internet very frequently and stuff like that. So like, what was it like working in that type of place? I mean, was it just very corporate and like you didn't really have an influence of the fact that you were working for a company that was working in gaming, or was it like, was the culture interesting in that in some other way?
Yeah, they tried to be fun. And they were very siloed, very, very siloed. I was kind of hired on to work more in a point of sale. But I ended up working more in their logistics.
Logistics again
in Canada. But that they were, I kind of used to think Graham was kind of messed up, but GameStop, they kind of messed up. They did a lot of ebbs and flows with like a lot of companies, but they cut out all the, I would say 90% of their developers and then bring me in to manage projects without any developers.
So they cut their way to prosperity.
Exactly. And so I was just, nobody there to be able to do anything. It was really hard to get things done. But I tried.
Yeah. It's funny. I was just, so at my day job, you know, I'm also just like you, I'm an IT leader, but we just went through a demo. I'm going through demos these last couple of weeks. We're looking at new ERP, you know, comprehensive platforms and stuff like that for, you know, ERP, workforce management, and CRM. And we had a demo with one vendor that was fantastic. Like, they just blew our socks off. And then we had another demo actually just before this call. I was on that call, and it was very meh at best. And on one hand, you know, you're like, oh man, these people wasted our time. But then on the other hand, I'm like, it created this comparison reference point for which we can say, like, we understood what we don't want, you know, even if, so speaking with them or being there and engaging with them helped us to see and more clearly understand, you know, not just what we do want, but what we don't. And, you know, you mentioned about, you know, it sounds like you kind of got a similar level of clarity as you shifted around from different roles. You know, you kind of like, oh man, I'm with the bus company. The bus company is kind of backwards. But then you get somewhere else and you're like, wait a minute, like, other places are also backwards. Maybe this isn't quite as crazy as I thought it was originally. Maybe the world is crazier than I thought.
Yeah. And even at Ground, there's like, I went back to Ground and actually I was like the first callback. And there's about maybe five or six callback people too. And all of us really realized that we were pretty good back in the 90s and 2000. We knew what we were doing. We built stuff like the dispatch system. It wasn't just me. There was a lot of people that put in the effort to make it you know, stay up, run, do what it's supposed to do. Supportability was I don't think it's, I don't know if people know what that means nowadays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's tough. It, you know, a well-designed legacy application can still has a place, you know, if you, you know, depending on what your needs are. I mean, like people don't really think about how much, take like COBOL, you know, the irony is that I actually, when I was in school, I was at the tail end of still being taught COBOL, which is much more recent than you think. like I was in the late 90s, I was in college getting taught COBOL, but the even today, you know, that's 25 years ago, 25 plus years ago now. And that skill is still has some value because COBOL is a language and other languages similar to it that run on some of these mainframes and stuff are still used as the core legacy applications in some of these major businesses, you know, like is a functional language. It was really efficient at financial calculation work. So there, and there isn't anything newer that's better. You know, I mean, it, like you talk about supportability can become a challenge in some of those things, but the newer stuff is not any more efficient at it. And matter of fact, it's probably less efficient because the coding is more abstract from the actual, you know, as you get down to the base layers you're working down the stack into the, you know, I can't even think of the base language name, but there's a lot of, because it's so efficient, when you get into these huge organizations, it just makes sense to retain it for a long time and to carry it through into new platforms that will support it.
Yeah, we were willing to push maybe 5 or 6, where everybody was trying to get rid of all that old stuff. But I think the last few years now, everybody's realized we're going to live with all this old stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of it, you definitely will. Yeah. So let's change gears here a little bit. Talk about your history and your kind of, you know, how you got to where you are today to become a leader in IT. And one of the things we always like to ask to share with the listeners of the podcast is what things, well, first of all, how do you motivate people? You know, you mentioned through we were talking about your job history. You were like, hey, this one role kind of taught me that I really like motivating people and I like being fulfilling that role. So what do you do to motivate people?
Really just getting their input on, even if I already know what has to be done, I want to talk to the people that are doing the work, give them input on how it can be done, what efficiencies, what ideas they have. Again, may not go the way they with their idea, but I find just getting their input makes them feel valuable, which they are valuable. So that's key, and that's key for me too. So I kind of look at things the way I, you know, that what's that empathy? I kind of put myself in their shoes, and again, I don't like just telling people what to do. I know people don't just like being told what to do. Mm-hmm. So just make them part of the decision making process, and sometimes they do come up with a better way of building a better mousetrap.
Mm-hmm.
And some people, it's their job to have that kind of input too, but those people are pretty easy to motivate.
Yeah.
But even like one of my strengths, I don't know if you've heard of Clifton Strengths Finders. One of my strengths really has always been, I guess, being strategic thinking. But it's hard to be a strategic partner with the business, especially being a junior person. But getting that seat at the table, once you get that seat at the table, it's very, very gratifying. But other junior people need to have that type of input. Otherwise they're going to go somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any advice for folks who are trying to get that first seat at the table or things that they could do or try to, you know, what should they be reaching for?
Yeah, really just being patient and having that voice. And then don't be afraid to I'm not the best at challenging and piping up. I'm too quiet. But if they don't be afraid to chime in, but make sure you know what you're talking about too, though. But so be educated, understand the business, take other people's perspective into account. Somebody that's been done something for 20 years and you just don't have that much exposure, you might want to get a little more tenure before you start being too strategic. But if you got a good idea, get it out there.
So shift gears again here. We always like to ask, there's a handful of questions we love asking on the podcast about just different, I call them fun things. So the big go-to is always, what was your first computer or technology piece? Like, what, go way back when you were a kid, like what did you, you know, did somebody buy, you know, an Atari system? Was it before that? Was it later than that? You have to, you know, some Commodore computer. What was your first experience?
Pong.
Pong.
Actually, I did have one of the original Pongs, but I had an Atari and I loved the games and stuff, but there was a thing where you could actually program on an Atari. It was just a basic. It was really just really true basic. Yeah. Go to commands.
Yeah. But, yeah. Was it like Logo or something? Was it?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. I remember Logo.
I played with that and I was like, maybe I'm a nerd. I don't know, but I was not a nerd in school. And pure class I took in school, I failed out. I did not. I may be being told what to do in school as opposed to doing it on my own. But yeah, that Atari was, I thought, pretty hip technology. But
yeah. So you're doing programming, but you had no success, if you will, in school. Like, just you took the computer classes. They're like, yeah, get out of here, man. Like, this is not, you know, you're not doing what we need to do here.
Career counselor told me I should look into ditch digging. I mean,
they told you to be a ditch digger. It's like this is a quintessential, like, don't we, you know, there's the stereotypical things that the career counselor says, you know, was that career counselor also like smoking a cigarette while they told you that too? Probably. Yeah. It's a way going back in the day to before, like all these things that we just sort of take for granted that don't happen now. But, you know, you think about that, I remember that I was at the tail end of some of that where like, you know, people would do things like smoking in buildings or other, you know, like I grew up in, now you're in, are you in Texas?
Yeah.
So you're in the Dallas area, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I grew up in Austin. And, you know, even though I'm in upstate New York now, but, you know, I remember when I was a kid in the 80s growing up and we had first moved down there. And at various intervals, you know, it was still like okay to drink in the car. And you would drive down the road and you would see somebody and they, you know, in a truck, and some dude in a truck would be like, he's sipping openly on like a beer in the truck as you're driving down the road.
Yeah, I was originally from a very small town in northern Michigan, and it was typical. Everybody had a beer in the car. I was like,
yeah, it's crazy. Everything is, it is different in Texas at times. And I, yeah, I remember it.
I used to smoke too. I smoked on planes. I smoked in malls.
Yeah,
it was great. I'll smoke again when.
Just so we know, kids, smoking is terrible for you. Smoking is bad, and smoking kills you. But you know, like you know, to transition from those times to today, and to think about all the things that we've changed, like it, you know, and it's so crazy how you become unaccustomed to it, right? Like you know, if you walk into a room where somebody's smoking, now you're like, what is going on here? Like, it's crazy. It's so noticeable. But, you know, you go back 30 years and like you walked into a room and it was like, you know, it might as well have been fog in the upper 5 feet of the room. And you thought absolutely nothing of it.
Yeah, that's how it was.
Hey guys, this is Phil Howard, founder of Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. I just want to take a few minutes to address something. It has become fairly apparent, I'm sure all of you will agree, over the years, that slow vendor response times, vendors in general, the average is mediocre. Support is mediocre. Mediocrity is the name of the game. Not only is this a risk to your network security, because I've seen vendors on numerous occasions share sensitive information, but there's also a direct correlation to your budget and your company's bottom line. Not to mention the sales reps that are trying to sell you and your CEO and your CFO on a daily basis. That causes a whole nother realm of problems that we don't have time to address. Our back office program at Dissecting Popular IT Nerds, we've put together specifically for IT leadership, and it's on a mission to eliminate this mediocrity. And the best part is that we're doing this in a way that will not cost your IT department a dime. So if you'd like us to help you out, get better pricing, better support, and jump on pressing issues in minutes, not days, then contact us now so we can get on a call with you and conduct a value discovery session where we find out what you have, why you have it, and where you want to go and how we can improve your life, your IT department, and your company's bottom line. What you're going to end up with is, number one, just faster support from partners who care about your organization's uptime and bottom line. And because you're going to be able to access our $1.2 billion in combined buying power, you'll be able to benefit significantly from historical data. And on top of that, you'll also benefit from the skills of hundreds of on-demand experts that we have working behind the scenes that are all attached to our back office support program. So if you'd like, again, none of this is ever going to cost you a dime. At the very least, it's going to open your eyes to what's possible. Let our back office team provide you the high-touch solutions and support that your IT team deserves so that you can stop calling 1-800-GO-POUND-SAND for support. Now, if you're wondering, what does this apply to? This applies to your ISPs, your telecom providers, all your application providers, whether you're a Microsoft shop or a Google shop, what you might be paying for AWS, even Azure, colocation space, any of those vendors that you're paying a monthly bill to, we can help you with.
Hey, it's Greg, the Frenchman secretly managing the podcast Behind the Curtain. To request your one-on-one call, contact us at internet@popularit.net. And remember, it will never cost you a dime.
So you had some exposure to technology when you were growing up, but you weren't a technology guy. You came to it later. You came to it through your kind of like exposure in the Navy and some other things like that. And it sounds to me like you kind of, well, I don't want to say you fell into programming, but you went to school. Did you go to school to be a programmer?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So you identified that was something that interested you, and then you pursued that. But then eventually you moved into leadership. So you're not doing, now you're not. I mean, when was the last time you picked up code? And maybe it was yesterday. I don't know. Maybe it was this afternoon.
I've had to stay somewhat hip to it. I couldn't sit down and code, but I can. I've done code check-ins and DevOps just because I haven't had people a lot of times. I couldn't stay as close to it as I'd like to, but.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, when I went to school, I was I took computer science, and I never, in my career, I've always been in IT operations delivery, not in development, but my degree is in computer science. So I have, lots of coding. I have C, COBOL, C++, Java, it's various intervals. I took all those classes. So I like to joke that it makes me sharp enough to know if somebody's like BSing me, I can sit with the programmers and be like, that's not really true, man.
That's a much, much, much needed skill. And especially with a project where the PM is trying to run and the PM is not ever done any coding and not intimate with it. They can just get snowballed.
Mm-hmm.
And having somebody in the room that can at least call BS. Exactly.
So I'm gonna ask this kind of fun question, just because you mentioned that your early one was Pong. Is there a piece of technology that you hang on to that you would be like, oh God, yeah, nope, I still use a flip phone, type of deal, or, whatever the case may be. Is there some like old piece of technology that you just love to hang on to because you like it and you're still hanging on to it, but now it's anachronistic?
Well, I do have one of those game sticks now that has 500 video games from 1989.
Yeah.
And that's kind of my thing, where my sons, they're doing war games and stuff like that, where I try to play their games. I get killed 3 times before I figure out who the bad guy is. But I still play the old Defender and Asteroids and Space Invaders.
Ah, Space Invaders. With my kids, my kids are young. I don't know how old your kids are. Mine are 6 and 9, but like we take them to some of the arcades and stuff like that. They have like some new Space Invaders things. So it has these giant arcade games now. And it's like Space Invaders. I think it's called Space Invaders Frenzy. And it's like a 10-foot tall version of Space Invaders where you sit in a seat with like a Gatling gun type of setup. And it just like goes bananas, like shooting at the things that are there.
See, I've seen the Chuck E. Cheese, and I think that looks awesome.
It is kind of fun to play. I'm not going to lie. So, hey, so getting back to more serious stuff here. We are a leadership podcast. So I want to ask, as we kind of come up towards the end of our interview, what leadership qualities would you share with folks with our listeners out there? Is there rules or ideas that you follow? Is there philosophies that you would share? What advice would you give to somebody else, either in the leadership space or looking to come into the IT leadership space?
There's one I kind of learned or discussed more recently that really kind of hit home to me. And then spending so many years trying to culture my people to all be A players and feel this, do this, and they all wanting almost everybody to be the same, basically. But that doesn't make really good sense, right? So, and I hate to use a sports analogy, but you need somebody that's really good at being a quarterback. You need somebody that's really good at being a defender. So you don't need to make everybody an A player. You might need the solid, steady guy that's there to do what he does to support. Mm-hmm. And really, you know, and again, just getting input from people. There's various different, like I mentioned, the strength finders, but there's also DISC. I love those things. Really teaches you how, like, people work and how they want to communicate, how they can communicate, how can they best be a value. And really helping them, spending time investing in them to do those kind of things makes them feel valuable too. You actually want them to do something for themselves. So again, invest in your people, listen to your people, and just the overall culture. You can't just build culture. You can't just say, okay, we're going to be a positive culture. And you can't tell everybody to memorize the mission statement of the company. That's a good culture. No, that's not.
Well, you get the movie Office Space, and like, you know, the banner that hangs across. It's like, is this good for the company? Like, you know, stand there and ask yourself.
But even my wife recently at work, they're making her sit where she doesn't want to sit. Mm-hmm. What would it cost them to say, you sit wherever you want? I mean, then that would change attitudes so instantly. But just little things like that. And you gotta invest in culturalization. The difference, I'm just reading a book on it now, but I don't have the numbers, but the profit ratio of a good culture company versus a bad is huge. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got a positive culture, you've got positive income. But I'm doing more research on that. That's just, culture's king. Especially, yeah. I've been so lucky at Ground to have a very good culture that's been gone, actually. We were bought by a German company about 2-3 years ago. Mm-hmm. That great culture is no longer there. Germany's great. I've gotten to visit Germany a few times, love the country, mm-hmm. and good people, but the overall culture is not. We're just, I guess, overseas is hard.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's different culture clashes. So like, if I'm hearing what you're saying as you when you're investing in your people as a leader, like you don't necessarily, you know, you said not everybody's going to be your A player. So you have to meet people where they're at as far as what their leadership really is. Like, is there, you know, sometimes having somebody who isn't motivated to be the next, you know, senior developer is totally fine as long as they are satisfied and happy with the positions that they're in, and you're meeting their expectations as from a leadership perspective, and that's 100% okay. Then I heard you also say that the culture of the organization is, you know, motivated cultures make motivated staff, which makes motivated businesses. So you've got businesses that will prosper if the people are happy that are there. And meeting that expectation isn't that significant. Like, you know, you used the story of your wife there and how she's able to move. There's 100 desks in this place, and they're telling her she's got to sit at the one, you know, in row 2, you know, 2B. But she could sit anywhere because most of them are just unoccupied, and then maybe they're hot desks. And if, you know, so how do you make, you know, satisfies people's needs? And simple things might satisfy their larger needs in the long run.
Yeah, there's so many little things that then might be some so minor that just tweaking somebody off and you don't even know it. But
mm-hmm. Wow. So All right. Well, we are at the end of our podcast. So, John, thank you so much for investing your time with us today on the podcast. So that's a wrap on today's episode of Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. I'm Doug Kameen, and we look forward to coming to you on our next episode.